Hello, you're listening to Laser Graves, a podcast where we dig up movies, music, books, and events from the 80s and discuss how rad they were.
Hi, everyone.
Was that enthusiastic enough?
Who are you talking to?
You. Specifically you.
Why do I care?
Because I've been quiet on our intros, but loud later.
Like how you were just quiet as you were saying that?
Yeah. So I thought I'd start real loud.
Okay. I think that's just normal podcasting voice that you're now using. But in your mind, it's like real loud.
It feels like I'm shouting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're not.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey.
And hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode.
Uh-huh. Hi.
I don't know.
Hey,
I don't...
you.
Yeah.
Welcome back to our closet.
So we've got an interesting one this week. It's more of a classic, I guess, in a way, but...
I'd never seen it, so I can't confirm... Nor can I deny its classic status.
Yeah, but I realized that there are a lot of classics I haven't seen either. And it's interesting because I guess I assume if it's called classic, I've seen it.
What makes something a classic and who calls it a classic? Do I get to say that Night of the Twisters is a classic movie? And then Devon Sawa gets to hold that power?
It is totally a classic.
So it is.
Yeah.
Do you remember how many times we watched that in the summer of, like, 2000?
Yeah. How many times you wanted to watch that in the summer?
No. This was specifically when we were super poor college students, and my roommate had, like, four movies, and it was that, Rent, Romeo and Juliet.
And... Oh, no. And the other one with Leonardo DiCaprio, like, The Boy's Room or something like that. Do you remember? It was, like, a drama.
Yeah, so it was Night of the Twisters.
All the way.
Every night was Night of the Twisters.
Was that the one with the flying cows? No, what was that called? Twister?
That's just simple Twister.
But Night of the Twisters, based on a novel.
Oh, yeah. We have the novel.
Because I bought you the book. I was so excited. I found the actual book, Night of the Twisters. And then you just never read it.
I've memorized every word of it.
Oh, have you? Who wrote it?
Devon Sawa.
Okay, well, hello, everyone, and...
Oh, we're greeting again?
No, I'm just shifting the focus back to our podcast and not Devon Sawa.
That's what this is shifting toward.
Okay. How was your week?
It was pretty good. It was kind of a weird week, but I think good.
Good?
It was one of those weird weeks where nothing happens and nothing is different, nor is it the same.
Good. But you were productive?
Yeah.
Good.
How about you? How was your week?
It was good. It's pretty quick. This week went by really fast.
Uh-huh.
And it was strange. This is off by a couple weeks because we record so early, but tonight...
We just can't hold ourselves back.
Right. But it's kind of weird because tonight I've been getting texts from everybody because the premiere for one of the films I scored is happening in L.A. as we speak. And so instead of me being in L.A., I'm where I should be. And that's in my closet with my best friend talking about awesome stuff.
Oh, hold on. I don't think we've introduced ourselves.
Oh, right. Yeah. I am E.K. Wimmer, one of your hosts, and you are?
I am Mariah Rose Wimmer, also known to most people as Lord of the Dogs.
I was wondering this week, I was waiting to see where you would insert the Lord of the Dogs.
Because I put it between my first and middle.
Yeah, it's because you're using three names, like a diva, like a thespian, instead of one. Because if it was just Mariah Wimmer, it would be like Mariah Lord of the Dogs Wimmer.
Oh.
But because you're doing Mariah Rose, now it's like there's way too many names happening.
So complicated.
That's why I think back a few episodes ago when we decided you should just be Lord of the Dogs.
Okay. And actually, it goes in line with what we were talking about before we started recording, how I was saying that all of our neighbors on our block should seal off their back doors, leaving only a dog hole, like a dog entrance exit, and then we could knock down all of our fences and just have one Uber backyard, and I would be the only person who was allowed back there.
Yeah. I don't like any of that.
I think it's just like heaven.
I want my privacy, and I don't want other people's animals pooping in my backyard. So, well, let's get to it.
How are you going to gracefully transition from dog poop?
Well, it's a life force for some.
Oh!
Da-da!
It is a life force.
So this week is Life Force. It's a movie directed by Tobe Hooper, who I guess all people associate with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay.
He's one of the directors that has diehard fans, even though his films have kind of progressively just gone further and further down over the years. But I've always liked him as a director. I think he's fun.
Down just in popularity, you mean?
Yeah, okay. Like every film that comes after Texas Chainsaw will never like match the phenomenon of Texas Chainsaw, for good reason.
That's unfair. I mean, it's like an artist of any caliber. If they have one really popular piece, everything else just kind of pales in comparison.
Well, especially if they like start early with a popular piece, then it's going to be always compared to mm-hmm. it. This film is right between two popular pieces, though. This is right between Poltergeist and Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, which I absolutely love.
That was good.
So, and I think we can do that. So
at some point.
Because that's legit 80s.
I have a question for you, though. Did you actually research the pronunciation of his name? Because it's spelled T-O-B-E. Which
right.
is not a traditional spelling for the name Toby. I feel like he should be pronounced Tobe.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was looking at names and I saw one that was M-A-R-I-A, which is not the traditional spelling for Mariah.
You're a pud.
So I think you should be called Maria.
Quit being such a wiseacre.
It's Tobe Hooper. You're the only person in the history of the world who's ever questioned his first name.
Okay. So Tobe made another movie.
Tobes McGee.
The Tobester.
No, he made this movie, although he didn't really technically make Poltergeist. I think that's more Steven Spielberg kind of just commandeered the ship and directed it for him. But we don't need to get into that. Yeah, so normally we don't do like a whole backlog on the cast and crew and stuff, but this is a stacked one.
Oh, you're going into it?
Well, it's a classic for a reason because so many people are involved.
You did some research. I did not.
Well, not too much. I just watched the credits as the film started. So
I can't be bothered.
The names
that
stood out to me. Well, the one I did have to look into was this is based on a novel by an author, Colin Wilson, who hated this film, by the way. He had dissed on one of the adaptations of his novels and then said this is by far the worst adaptation of any book I've ever written. But it was the big one that I noticed was the screenplay was not by him. It was by Dan O'Bannon, who I recognized right away from Dark Star, John Carpenter's film. But he also is the writer of Alien, and he did the screenplay for Total Recall, Return of the Living Dead, like all kinds of, he's like a big name. And so I thought that was cool because I did not know he was associated with this film. And then Henry Mancini did the score, who's like old school Hollywood, like Breakfast at Tiffany's and Pink Panther, things like that. So that was kind of cool because the score was very much like
super traditional.
I'm familiar
with the Pink Panther score.
So they had a good crew assembled, which I thought was cool. And it helps explain why this would be considered a classic, even if it's not a great film. It's still a lot of really cool people involved.
Do you feel like it was, or do you know if it was successful?
No, it was not at all.
Okay, good. So it's, in fact, not a classic because it was neither successful nor well-known?
Well, I mean, I guess like a lot of cults weren't successful, but they're classics.
Yeah, but I mean, is this even a cult film? Or is
I would
like,
say anything that Tobe Hooper directs is going to be an instant cult film. I mean, there's certain directors that anything they touch is going to be considered a cult film.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's just one of those people.
How do you
people.
Get into that window where everything you do is cult?
Well, especially in the horror world, like those early Renaissance directors, you know, like Tobe Hooper, Wes Craven, Clive Barker, Sean Cunningham, all these people are like, they're early on. And so John Carpenter's a big one that if they have a good hit, then anything after that is like a cool film, even if it's not great. And so Tobe Hooper, because of Texas Chainsaw. And the other one, what was that? Was it Alligator? What was it called? With Robert Englund. Wasn't that Toby's film?
I don't know, dude. On any level do I know that. You could say Alligator. Sounds good, but I might be thinking of how, you know, Robert Englund has alligator skin.
Okay. Well, I think it was that.
Okay.
All right, cool. Glad I had you along for that conversation.
I feel better about things.
Yeah. So let's get into this film. You ready?
Oh, yeah. What are we watching? Life Force.
Life Force, which was not the name of the book.
Is it two words or one? I don't even remember. Okay. Yeah. Life Force.
It starts off right away with that Vestron logo. Remember? It like starts up so cool.
Yeah. And then there's another. It's lots of like, you know, buzzing sounds.
Good job. You're like that dude from Spaceballs.
Why did I do that? I instantly regretted it.
I didn't. I really hope it comes up more. There's a hidden talent there. So opens up, we're with a space crew on a ship named Churchill, and they are traveling through space.
Yeah, this is where we figure out it's a British crew.
Well, it's half British, half American.
But it's called Churchill.
Right. Sure.
Okay.
And they're going through space, and they're tracking down Halley's Comet.
Like you do.
So this is interesting. In some of the fun facts I did look up, the only person that thought this was a good idea was Tobe Hooper. He changed it at the last minute. This is not in the book. Dan O'Bannon didn't like this idea. Like, nobody liked the idea. But Tobe Hooper knew that Halley's Comet was going to be the next year, so he thought it was really smart to place it there. And I would argue, I think that was a smart choice. I thought it was kind of cool. It places it in the time.
I could see where he would aim for that. Did you see Halley's Comet, by the way?
Yeah, I do remember it, for sure.
Me too. I was in like a field behind my elementary school with my parents.
Yeah, I don't remember where I was. I mean, clearly not as much as like Hale Bopp, but I definitely remember.
Oh, what the Hale Bopp?
So, but he changed the script last minute, and I didn't really have a problem with it. I think the original was like an asteroid belt or something like that. But they're looking at Halley's Comet, and the whole opening sequence is very, like, artsy-fartsy. I really loved all the special effects for this, where they go into some kind of spacecraft.
Like, head of the comet.
Yeah.
And then they find a spacecraft.
Right, and they go in. Craft. But the whole opening scene, which I read they cut down by, like, 30 minutes... It was really long. Was so cool. I really, this is one of my favorite parts of the whole film.
Are you talking about when they enter the ship?
Just all the visuals of it is amazing.
Like at first, it looks like they're almost in like some sort of guts situation.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pinks and like reds.
And a lot of like circular, like organic shapes. Yeah. And then they bust into this like crystalline,
it's bluish,
cocoonish area. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was all super cool. I didn't mind it at all. I thought it was neat.
And I'm glad that they shortened it, though, because I could see where I'd feel like I was on, like, a weird, you know, I don't know, drug journey from the 60s if I took too long in those spaces.
Yeah. And it would get kind of old. But that's why Henry Mancini decided to do the score. Like, his agreement was because there was supposed to be this 15-minute opening scene where he could just have free reign to really create a really sweeping score, which he does a great job. And I thought it was...
I have a few.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I liked the score overall. I thought it was pretty awesome.
I don't know. There's a few parts where there's like babies crying along with the music.
Well, I don't know if that was his.
I
think they edited in some music that wasn't his.
They're on a ship. They enter a blue like crystal cave, and there's a lot of bat creatures flying around.
Well, they're like just kind of there. They're like these
weird dead bat
mutant human people, and they go to check it, and one of the fingers snaps off, and they realize
it's like dusty.
Yeah, they're just like hollow dust corpse things.
Yes. Also, at this point, did you notice that they're wearing full astronaut like space suits, but they have fingerless gloves on?
No, but that's like, interesting because you know what I noticed a couple notes from now was their astronaut costumes looked really great, but they are wearing jackets and pants that are separate with an open, like somebody just zipped a jacket up. And I thought, That's not how spacesuits work.
Yep. They would be full dead at this point.
Okay. That's funny.
Between
no, I didn't notice the other
gloves.
One.
Gloves. Yeah. Okay. So they use a special space net and capture one of the bat-like people. And then it was about this time that this, like, the spaceship from which these astronauts deployed spots like a, it's like a long finger sort of, or an umbrella shape coming out. And they're like, what's happening? And there's bright lights. And then up pop some crystals, like giant crystals, like that you would use to cleanse your aura if you lived in
space
California.
Aura. Oh, by the way, that spaceship, the design was based on an artichoke. So
okay.
There you go.
I totes thought it was a penis, but whatever.
Oh, well, that's something that you have to deal with on your own time.
I mean, come on, it was a little phallic. So the inside of these crystals, cleansing the auras of some space babes.
Oh, they are like the models, like uber hotties.
Yep.
All of them. They're like just crystallized perfect people.
Lots of cheekbones, lots of naked.
Lots of everything. Yeah. And I was like, dang, these are good looking people. So clearly they didn't have a lot of lines. So they were all looks and that was about it.
Lots
but they
of symmetry.
Did a very good job casting that. Do you know who was supposed to be one of the vampires?
Who?
Here's a fun fact for you, which would have been so rad.
What?
Billy Idol.
Oh.
In the heyday of the mid-80s.
Why did this not happen?
I don't know. That would have looked awesome.
I would have not fallen asleep at any point if he was in this movie.
There's sometimes I read, like, you know who almost got cast or almost did mm-hmm. this, and I really don't care. But other times, there's few occasions where it really stands out that I'm like, man, that would have been amazing. One of them was when Blondie was tasked to do one of the James Bond themes. And they did it,
mm-hmm.
and it's an incredible song, and they opted out, like they passed mm-hmm. on it and went with some super lame song instead. It later appeared I think it came out on Headhunter, but it's such a great track, and mm-hmm. I think, like, what were they thinking? Man, Blondie did this awesome James Bond-themed song, and then they scratched it, so.
That's lame. You know what I just heard along those lines? That Matthew McConaughey thought he got the role for Jack in Titanic.
What?
All right, all right, all right.
That would have been great.
All right, that's all.
All right.
Okay, so crystal body people.
Yep. Babe alert.
One of them's like, ooh, I feel weird. And then they are like, let's reel them in and skedaddle.
Well, there's instantly this setting that they're all kind of like being manipulated mm-hmm. a little bit. Like they can't tell what's going on. One of them starts to feel a little queasy. The other is like drawn in. The captain, mm-hmm. Tom, whatever, like the main guy that's in the movie. Mm-hmm. I have his name written somewhere
specifically
else.
Specifically just call him astronaut.
Oh, well, he's the one who is like, he has some weird connection and can't take his eyes off of her. And once somebody's like, she's the perfect girl, the main mm-hmm. girl who's just credited as Space Girl.
That's what she is.
Yeah. Also, so yeah, they go back to the ship. The zero G effects, I thought those were really cool. Did you like those?
No.
Really?
They really were. Like, I mean, I've never been in space, but that was not convincing to me as I imagine space to be. I truly thought they were just people on, like, ropes.
Okay, so here's where I'm going to back it up and say, is that you in 2019 thinking that, or 2018, or 1985? Because mm-hmm. in 1985, if you saw people with no strings or anything floating like that,
mm-hmm.
I thought those effects were pretty rad.
Well, I was 4, so I don't remember.
Haley's Comet the next year.
I was a pretty judgmental 4-year-old, so probably
well, not much has changed.
Probably would have just turned off the TV and stomped away.
This isn't real zero gravity.
No.
So this is when I noticed the jackets, by the way, that they weren't tucked in.
Okay, so it cuts away from this then and, like, moves forward in time.
Yeah, because the ship doesn't return. And they're going to send out another space shuttle, like, to go look for the crew.
Yes, and this is where we learned that it's, like, all British. And that's kind of where they lose me, because I'm like, okay. You guys are at the forefront of the space race.
Good one.
Seriously, were you
it's
not
true.
Like...
It should have been Russians.
Whatever. Yeah. It should be America or China or Russia.
Yeah.
And instead they go with
the
England?
British, yeah.
please.
Yeah.
So they're funding this project.
No, I think America was funding and the British were like, we'll go do it.
So has England ever even had their own spaceship, let alone two?
I don't know.
You
know what? I am not an authority on this. So okay, I'm say a solid no.
Okay, and also, like, we're arguing the reality of this movie.
And I imagine the British are those people. Like, do you remember that? What was that weird low-budget indie that we watched? I think it came out in the late 90s where the guy just built his own chair with balloons or whatever.
No, that was like a real thing.
Was it based on a real story?
Yeah, it was a documentary. Some weirdo in Oregon did that.
No, this one was a British comedy. Remember?
Oh, yeah. I do
that guy
remember.
That was funny, too. I don't know what else he did.
Ugh, crap. I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, but that's what I imagine the British spacecrafts to look like, is just a bunch of helium balloons tied to a lawn chair. And they're like, would you look at the lawn side?
What?
Mother, I'm going up for a little bit of a tipsy tour.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Your eyes are sparkling, but your voice is not.
Oh, whew.
I'm not
4-year-old
even.
4-year-old judgment coming.
Nah, I'm not even going to try a British accent. But you do really shine with the Australian accent.
I do. But I'll save that for an Australian movie when we cover like Mad Max or something.
Yeah. Oh. Yes. Okay. So then they sent up another ship to find, because I guess the old one's floating around. And so they want to go find out what happened. They do a soft dock, apparently. They say that. So
oh,
I wrote
okay.
It, a soft dock.
Yeah. And they find out that there's been a fire and everybody's dead.
There's
some
floating, like,
corpses. Except the bodies are immaculate. They're
crystal bodies are still in shape, so they're like, let's snag those and head on home.
And so they take them back, and then they're gonna examine them, and the doctors have the main female. There's two, so we're clear, there's two males
in the crystals,
two like hunks, and then one babe, and she's laid out on the table, and they're going to go, like, examine who this thing is. Like, is it human? Is it not? But it looks human.
Yeah, they leave the guys, like, in their cases.
Yeah, well, they're behind glass with guards behind them.
But she, for some reason, has only a green sheet over her nude body.
Right.
And she's separated.
Well, I got the impression, I thought about that, and I got the impression through
that
the whole movie.
She's hotter, so they're going to use
she's definitely
they're
hotter.
They're going to exploit the
but,
female.
Yeah, there's that. That's the obvious read, but dig deeper, Mariah.
Mm-mm.
I got the impression that she was the only one out of the three vampire things that were, that had this, like, mind control over them, because all the rest just were collectors. They weren't like, the
she
leader.
She was, like, the hive mother.
Yeah, and so I think that They're trying to examine, and then she wakes up.
So,
and
well,
it's very old school Hollywood. It's like 1950s style monster movie.
So she's being, like, monitored, and there's a guard, and she sits up. She, like, springs up. She's like, anyway, that space travel was
weird.
Oh, but
she got the cool eyes, the, like, Bride of Frankenstein look.
Yeah.
It's cool.
She's naked.
Yes,
she's
smiling. Very naked.
And then she aggressively kisses him in what is probably one of the most awkward cinematic kisses.
Yeah, and probably the best moment for this guy in his life.
So she kisses him, and there's a blue lightning storm in this room.
It's very, do you remember Master of the Universe? It's like those cheesy blue lighting effects. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So it's that kind of style. She sucks the life out of him.
She drains him.
He turns into this, like, shriveled version of himself, like Mortal Kombat when, you know, Shang Tsung, like, sucks your soul. And then he falls over, and she's just like, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to, like...
She's refreshed. She's had her, like, Fresca, and she's ready to go.
Her Tang. It's the 80s. So she... Yeah. She has no lines. She's just quiet. She's like this weird creature that's got this mind control over people and apparently superpowers. And she starts to walk out. She captures one of the, like, other doctors.
And... well, he's watching on a video as she drains the first, and he comes running, alerting no one. And she goes for him, but decides not to kill him. Was this the curly-haired dude that she drained, or a different one?
I don't remember.
Okay, they're all the same. They're all British.
They're all British. And you know what I did love, though, is she drained the first guy. He watched on the monitor. He ran down. She drained him. And then two more guys watched him being drained on the monitor, and they ran down. And I was like, this, in theory, could go on for an hour and a half.
It kind of does. So she partially drains a scientist. And then... kind of leaves him alive, decides to take a, like, naked stroll through the facility. Security guard holds out a chip and calls her, like, an actual, I'm going to eat Pringles.
Oh, like, he's calling a dog. And he's like, yeah, here, come here.
Lady,
come
naked
here.
Lady.
Because they're like, she's crazy. She's totally crazy. And
he
he's
holds
like,
out a
it's
chip.
Okay. It's okay. Come here. Like, he's, like trying to get her back
whatever.
In a cage.
Whatever. And she's like, so now funny. You're dead.
Yeah. Oh, she totally kills
she's
him. It's
so
awesome.
Mad.
Yeah.
She's so mad that he holds out a chip.
And then there's a shot of her silhouette of her going across the wall. Do you remember that when this old security guard is standing there? Mm-hmm. And then the silhouette goes first and it's just her boob. It's really funny.
And then she blows out the windows.
Walks on through.
It's like nighttime and she just kind of disappears into the night.
It must be cool to be... It's clearly she's French.
She's... Is she?
In real life, is there any question?
Well, I don't know.
Is this character... If this character was a nationality... It would be a French woman who would have the confidence to be totally nude and just walk through the streets.
I did notice, as a woman, how very carefully she was walking to not jiggle.
Oh, yeah.
Like, on any level. Every step was very carefully placed.
Interesting, because I thought that was just, like, the creature. I thought that was really cool, because it gave her this weird... unhuman quality, the way she walked, very like she was balancing an egg on her head or something.
No, it's to like minimize the lady jiggle.
Oh.
Because there's all the parts and they're all exposed, and if she just like casually strutted down the stairs, it would become a different kind of movie.
Yeah. Well, she walks out. She's like out. Which is funny because they're like, there's no ways, you know, she's just going to walk out of here.
She uses
and she just does.
Blue lightning to blow out the windows.
This is awesome. She walks out and then we kind of flash back to the doctors are all examining now this corpse that was drained in the medical room that she drained, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene is so cool.
Oh, yeah. It's really probably the best scene in the whole movie.
I loved it. I loved everything about it. This body starts to kind of reanimate. It opens its eyes, and its weird shriveled corpse reaches out, and it grabs this guy and starts sucking his life, and then it starts to come back.
Yeah, so this is the first guy she drained. He's, like, waking up, and he sucks the life out of the person who's performing his autopsy.
Yeah, it is such a cool scene.
Yeah, and this is where also, like, it's kind of intercut with other scientists who are observing, and they decide... that she's just sucking the life force. So this is where we kind of get the whole premise of the entire movie. And it's kind of like a disease. You can see where it spreads so quickly. So she drains the life force, and then in 2 hours, they need to drain somebody else's life force.
Or else. Well, that one doctor put it together really fast. He's like, it's been precisely 2 hours.
Yeah, that was weird. Whatever.
And then he runs down because they've locked up the one guy who had already been drained. And sure enough, like clockwork in the little prison cell, in 2 hours, he can't get a drink or whatever, a little bit of life.
Can't get that life
And he
force.
Flips out, and then he just like blows up into dust.
Yep.
It's really cool.
Meanwhile, they also found a body in Hyde Park.
Oh, right. Yep. Like a woman.
A woman's body. And there's this whole thing about how two dudes saw her with another woman who wasn't wearing much, and they came back to take a closer look because they thought they were having some sort of relationship, and these guys wanted to be like creepy pervs and watch them, and instead they discovered a corpse.
Yeah.
Corpse. So lesson learned, little pervs.
Little pervs, you're going to see a corpse.
You deserve to find a corpse.
Although they still technically saw boobs, so it was just like a shriveled corpse.
So, yeah.
to okay. each their own. And then we flash to the next scene is there's an escape pod from the Churchill has been notified that
the original spaceship
landed in Texas, and they go there, and Captain Tom Carlson, that's his name.
Astronaut.
He's the one who originally found the bodies to begin with in space.
Yeah, he was the, like, lead
captain. Yeah, it turns out that he is not dead. He's the only surviving crew member.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get him there, and then he gives a flashback. And this is where we get the whole backstory. So the backstory is that people started to kind of die, be picked off one by one, and they put together that these creatures should not be brought back to Earth. And so he decided to burn the whole entire ship and jump out in an escape pod, but turns out that they didn't go up in flames.
Also, he says it was the hardest thing to leave her. Like
because he was so drawn towards
her. He was attached to her. Okay, so also at this point, we see the big spaceship that's apparently designed on an artichoke just floating around. So we know that there's like a spaceship waiting for her out there in space. And then the astronaut guy, who I'm truly going to only refer to as astronaut
Tom.
Guy.
Major Tom. Captain Tom.
He's asleep, and then she kind of appears to him like a bat. And they kiss, and this is where the score gets really weird. So there's the score. There's also baby cries, like lightning strike sounds, and screams mixed in with the score. And it was so distracting, I could hardly pay attention to what was happening, because I was like, is that a baby crying as they're kissing?
All right, I'm going to go ahead and play devil's advocate. Oh, there was. Woo! Now I'm having flashbacks.
Yep.
But I will say, we find out this was a dream sequence. So,
yes,
in your dreams, how well have you composed this grand concerto without babies screaming and things making noises?
In my dreams, I have Freddie Mercury's voice, and I don't care about anything else.
But when he goes to sing, he just sounds like a baby.
Okay. So he wakes up from this. He's screaming. The British scientists say, yes, we think hypnosis is the way to go here.
Well, he's like, oh, I think I'm connected. So this is when we start to get the indication that he and the main woman, space girl.
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, vampire killer. No.
Mm-mm.
She is a vampire.
No, Abe Lincoln, vampire hunter is a book.
So she's Abraham Lincoln, vampire.
Period. Full stop. Okay. So, yes,
she's connected with him somehow, and now they're like, we should hypnotize you.
Let's see what's happening.
And so they do that, and this is when they find out that he can kind of see into the mind of her.
I guess.
Also, in this scene where he starts flashing back and he can track her, it's very Twilight Zone, and I actually liked this. There was this moment in the film, I thought, this is a cool story. I bet the book is really cool. I really want to read the book after this because the kind of premise is really interesting.
So she can change bodies. She leaves her body somewhere.
That's what he discovers. He's seeing her in her real, her next form. She's like jumped bodies and now she's just another 80s babe. But she's like really fashionable in this giant trash bag. Did you notice what she was wearing?
Yes. It was
like
a
literally a trash bag.
It was cool.
And somehow she looked amazing in it. And I'm like,
she had all that hair.
Because she was probably French also. Nah, she looked British, that one. The red-haired, curly.
Let's go with Icelandic.
She did not look Icelandic.
Who would wear a trash bag and make it look good? Bjork.
Yeah, but she did not look like Bjork.
That is the only person. Okay.
So she's walking around looking good in a trash bag.
Looking for the next life force to steal.
Decides to seduce this guy in a car.
Yeah, it seemed
a little unclear.
Lot of work.
However, this is, I had already had some indications of this, and then by this point I was like, okay, this is confirmed. Clearly, Species picked up on this film pretty hard.
Oh, for sure. Although I think Species had it more right because this one, she's like way out in the English countryside. I feel like to do what she was trying to do, she shouldn't be putting on clothes. She should just walk around the street and suck life force from every freaking dude who looks at her.
Yeah, it was the way in
which... Why did she find the old guy?
Yeah, her character, though, and the way she's trying to like get things from them and use her sexuality, this was definitely has to be a precursor to Species and also even further along... building upon that. Remember that one with Scarlett Johansson? What was that?
Oh, her?
Under
or
the
she?
Skin.
Oh, yeah. Under the skin. Yes, you're right.
It had that kind of feel, too.
I thought
and
of
I
that
was like,
too.
Dude,
yes.
These are all kind of that same streamline of like a sexy alien vampire kind of thing.
That actually, Under the Skin, that's very, I would say, very good.
That was kind of a cool film. I
really liked it. You guys should all watch it. It's contemporary, and don't watch it when you're tired because you have to have some energy, but it's worth it.
I thought it was pretty cool.
I liked it.
So he sees her. He starts describing a license plate and a address or whatever.
She's like hunting, basically.
The main doctor, his name is Dr. Hans Fallada.
Okay.
Because those two names go together.
Do they even matter?
They do not matter. They're just doctor.
Yes.
It should be like on Spies Like Us when they're like, doctor, doctor,
doctor.
Doctor.
British scientist.
Doctor.
So for some reason, they go to a hospital for the criminally insane?
No, let's hold on because there's an important thing that happens right before that. Dr. Fallada is in his office, opens up some kind of specialty Buffy the Vampire case, and pulls out this, like, medieval
sword.
Vampire slaying sword, which is very elaborate and has no justification.
And this is the guy who, like, was the first to go, yep, she is after Life Force.
Yeah.
After maybe two examples of something inconclusive.
And meanwhile, we forgot to mention the other two hunks broke free. Mm-hmm. And they're out and about. And this is where we see the first one. He arrives in the doctor's office as he's holding the sword.
Yes.
And then it cuts really quick and we don't see what happens. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we can go forward.
Now they go to the hospital for the criminally insane where we find Patrick Stewart. Who is the same age in all ages.
This is, look, I will read to you the quote on my notes.
Okay.
Who has looked the same age always.
He looks identical. Stealing life forces.
I feel like he was born out of the womb with a bald spot and the little horseshoe hair.
And that was
And
it.
A British accent.
He's good to go.
He, by the way, he was only 45. But he looks... I was like, how old is he? Is he ageless? Because he's got to be like 60 here.
Oh my goodness.
He's only 45. That's pretty damn young when you think about it.
How is that even
How
possible?
Has he looked 70 for so long? Okay.
Oh man.
Anyway, Patrick Stewart arrives.
What even? 45?
Yep.
I know so many 45-year-olds.
They do not look like
that.
Old. Yeah.
Even if they're bald, they don't look that old.
Yeah.
Even if they're gray, they don't look that
old. Do you want to know the funniest part?
He does have nice skin.
Okay, we didn't talk about this in the intro. You had not seen this film before, right?
Oh, no, definitely not.
Okay, I'd seen it once, and I didn't remember any of it until the end. And then I was like, oh, I definitely remember this part. I didn't know that Patrick Stewart was in this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so excited to see what young Patrick Stewart looked like. Turns out
he looks like Patrick Stewart.
So no surprises there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then we go back to Tom finds out that the alien girl has jumped bodies again, and they're, because, well, you know, or not jumped bodies again, that she had jumped bodies. They tracked down the one that he had.
She's apparently in an apartment for
the trash bag, like the hipster in the trash bag.
And she's got her own apartment at the criminally insane place. Is she an employee or
I have no clue.
It was extremely unclear
All
if she
I know
was an
is...
employee or if she like was a patient.
I can tell you this. This
what?
Is one thing for
tell
certain.
Tell it to me.
In addition to looking really cool in a trash bag.
Yes.
She has a giant David Bowie poster on the wall.
She had two, didn't she?
I don't know. I just saw one and I just like.
That was a
okay,
good poster.
Okay, this is cool.
So
she's there and this is the person that the main alien girl had jumped the body into. And this is the one that Tom had spotted in his dreams or whatever and said, we have to find her. So the doctors all rush in, the British and everything.
And
they
the astronauts there too.
They're all there.
The astronaut starts beating her. And then is this when the curly haired guy is like, I'm a natural voyeur.
Yeah. So what happens is he says, she's gone. I can sense she's gone. And then he goes, wait, no. She needs to come out. And then he realizes the only way he can communicate with this thing to, like, find if the spirit's still in there, that thing, is to rip off all her clothes and shout at her. Because
he, like, hits her, too.
I don't know if he hit her.
Yes.
Okay, I just definitely remember him ripping off all her clothes. And I thought, well, how does that change your ability to contact her like internally in her
well,
brain.
Because she's naked in a crystal when he sees her.
Okay.
So any...
Well, he strips her down like to her slip or whatever, and he starts mm-hmm. shouting at her, and he's like, "You may want to sit down to the British guy."
Yeah.
Kane is his name, the
curly haired guy.
Yeah. And he's like, "It's okay. I'm a natural voyeur."
So he's like cool with the astronaut beating a random mental patient, possibly,
sure.
or employee. And so then she fights this and then goes, "Oh, no, no, no. This is cool. I'm cool with this." Her eyes flutter and then she passes out after the kiss.
Right. And so it's implied that Tom like picked up where the body has jumped to next. And so they're like, I think this is what happened. I zoned this little tiny piece out, but I think it's that they said it's in another patient because they go
yes.
into the cell of this random dude.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, this is the guy.
They identify that he has a big mark on his face. And
yeah.
they're like, yep, it's the crazy guy with a huge birthmark.
Yeah, so they go in there and it's uh-huh. It's Tom, it's Kane, the British
curly-haired
doctor
guy.
And
Tom
then
being the
it's
astronaut.
Patrick Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
And they go in there. And one of the doctors is, like, pulling out a syringe to drug
There's,
the...
like, a steward, like an orderly.
Yeah. And then Kane is like, "Oh, can I see that real quick?" And then they pull on a full-on... This is all I could think
yes.
about was when Coop and Truman shove Leland Palmer into the cell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, "Psych, we actually know who it is."
Because
yep. they pull it on Patrick Stewart, and they drug him really quick, and they realize mm-hmm. that he was the one that she had actually jumped into.
Yes.
And so they drug him... And he's the alien,
mm-hmm.
and he goes to sleep.
So girl alien is in Patrick Stewart. Somehow, the astronaut and curly-haired British scientist guy figured this out, and an orderly is complicit in this drugging of a doctor.
It gives a slight, like, I don't approve
like
of this, but I'm going to go ahead and go along with it anyway. And then the next scene, they have him, because Patrick Stewart's drugged up. They have him passed out, and he's in a wheelchair, and I'm just like, Professor X, Professor X. And
yep.
I realized he can never be in a wheelchair
again.
Ever without mm-hmm. being Professor X.
No.
Like, there's
no.
literally no way.
That's it.
So Professor X is passed out in the wheelchair, and then one guy, though, oh, did you have something?
No, I'm looking at my notes. It says Dr. Armstrong is held in a mental prison by her being the lady.
Yes.
And then he speaks.
Oh, wait. Before he speaks, they're like, "We should keep drugging him." And what I love is one of the doctors
mm-hmm.
who he goes, he's concerned that giving him this medication may be too hard on his heart because he's an older guy.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, Patrick Stewart's only 45. And then I looked up the actor's age and they're basically the same age.
Okay.
And I'm like, so this actor has to relay the line. Like, be concerned because this may kill this old man, but this old man is 45 and he's my age.
Yep.
So it just goes to say that even in a film script, people think Patrick Stewart looks old.
He does.
Okay.
He has. He was born with a horseshoe of hair and his mom.
Glorious shiny bulb.
Was like, hello.
So, yes, then he speaks.
But he speaks in a woman's voice. He speaks in the space alien girl's voice.
Yeah.
That's so awkward. It made me deeply uncomfortable. I don't even remember what he says.
She starts to tell the story. She basically gives the backstory.
Yeah, she reveals something like his ship approached. He chose her as like the ideal feminine form.
Yeah, so basically like she...
He being the astronaut.
She took the form of his desires.
Him being the astronaut.
Yeah, Tom. So Tom's desires for the perfect girl manifested into her form because that's not what she really looks like. And so she took the form of his like mental image of a perfect girl, which is fine and dandy. However,
mm-hmm.
there were two other vampires in that spaceship thing.
Hmm.
Who was like, "Ooh, you know what? While I'm thinking of it, I'd like a perfect looking girl and I would love two scrumptious hunks."
Well, I mean,
it would be
Tom,
right?
No, because there were several other astronauts there at that time. It could have been any of them.
Oh, it could have been the female astronaut, too.
It could have been one of the dudes. Who cares?
Sure.
But
I was just, like, confused.
She identified him as the leader, and so she was going after his ideal.
I just didn't know who manifested the forms of the
two
hunks.
I'm guessing it was just the rest of the crew.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, good job to whoever did, because they look really good. So even though they're totally useless. Okay, so that's that. That's how we get the backstory. It was like
she reveals
destined to be.
The ship is approach. She chose his ideal feminine, and he screams for her to let him go. There's, I have blue lights and shaking. So much shaking.
Oh, and he repeatedly slaps Patrick Stewart in the face a lot. Which I thought was hilarious. I was like laughing.
He was very upset.
It was very violent and it escalated fast for no reason. He just doesn't take news that he didn't want to hear well.
No, he's kind of, he sucks. And I don't know why she chose him.
He does suck.
He's really terrible.
I also feel like I've seen him in something. And then I realized.
Yeah, I've seen him in stuff too.
I realized I didn't see him in something. Well, I mean, he's been in things that I guess maybe we saw, but they're like bit parts.
Mm-hmm.
What I realized is he looks like a relative of the guy from Lost who like plays the one in white, like of the two like God characters that plays chess and stuff. He's got those deep set eyes and that like dead look all on his face.
Definitely not who I'm thinking. I've seen him in weird
Google
like
it.
Stuff on TNT.
It's
I
like
think.
A son of. I bet it's his son.
Okay.
It's got to be doppelganger for sure.
Oh.
So then we cut to a scene of London is being destroyed, which I love. I'm all for this. This is great. Any like mass destruction scenes I think are fantastic.
Although, okay, so my notes say chaos on Earth as this alien vampire biz spreads. The victims cannot leave the bodies, only the original three.
Right.
So anytime somebody's had their life force sucked, they can't, like, body hop like their original three are able to.
No, they have to suck the life out of somebody else, or else in 2 hours they turn to dust.
Yes. And then another doctor is killed by one of the males.
Well, what we get is Dr. Falda, the main, like, German, the big doctor who's not allowed to speak in German, I read, even though he was German.
Huh.
And his name is Hans.
Okay.
He killed one of the vampires. So I think it's Kane that walks in. Yeah, it is Kane. Kane walks in.
Kane's curly-haired guy?
Yeah. And the doctor has killed the one of the vampire dudes with the sword. He said the old-fashioned way.
Yes.
Didn't stab him in the heart. Had to stab him right below in the, like, power zone or something.
Yeah, that was
And
dumb.
It had to be with lead. The sword is made of lead.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's important.
Well, lead's poisonous. Durr.
Okay, and then
this is where I started to fall asleep.
Like, well, okay, so there's a couple things that happen. One, Kane then kills the doctor because we find out that, the doctor has now been inhabited.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a really cool scene here where Kane grabs the sword. Or something. Maybe, no, I think he just shoots him.
Mm-hmm.
Shoots him. He does, because I made a note later on that he shoots him with a lead bullet, and it does the same effect as the sword.
Yes.
So, really, this elaborate medieval sword is totally unnecessary. Because you could just use a lead bullet.
Lead bullets.
He shoots
or, like,
him.
Even a pencil with old-timey pencil with lead.
Oh, yeah, like a little rubber mallet and a pencil, and you just tap it right into him.
Or just an aggressive, like, hand gesture.
Or a flick.
Oh.
Like, you flick the pencil at him.
No.
So he kills Falda, but I love as the doctor's falling and he knows he's dying and his like spirit's about to leave him in that blue electronic form. He just says, "Here I go."
Yeah.
And then he exits. It was such a cool scene.
How cool would it be to die and be like, "Here I go."
Oh, yeah.
All right, all right, all right.
All right, all right. He's like, as his spirit's playing the bongos.
Nude.
So Kane takes the sword. That's important.
Okay.
And then
Curly Boy has the sword.
Then we flash to the scene where all of them, Tom, the doctors, Patrick Stewart, they're all on a helicopter. They're like being transported. They took them all. Well, yeah. They're transporting. And then this is where I have, would you like to know what my note says?
Yes.
Mariah starts to drift to sleep. So
okay,
this is why you have a perplexed look on your face right now.
Can I interject here?
Yes.
Because I feel like people are going to believe me to be narcoleptic. I'm actually not at all. I'm not. I have horrible sleeping problems, and I discovered last night, why do I always fall asleep? And I think that there are only two movies that can keep me awake. After I've had a bad night.
Okay.
because I've lost a lot of sleep. And I think that only funny movies or horror movies that are fast-paced can keep me awake.
Oh, like, okay.
I think that's it.
Everything else you fall asleep on?
I feel like, yeah. I feel like it's a roll of the dice, at least. Because I'm a terrible insomniac, so when we're just, like, chilling on the couch before bed, I don't feel the anxiety of 3 in the morning. And I'm like, this is cool. I feel cozy, and I just drift off.
I have a question. Okay. Have we, for Laser Graves, gotten through a single movie episode yet where you haven't fallen asleep?
I don't think it's
okay.
Happened.
Well,
that's why I felt like I had to have this little disclaimer.
Okay. So they're on this helicopter. You missed one of the coolest scenes in the entire
film. Was this the blood scene?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't. I was, like, doing the head drop.
Oh, thing. Yeah. You were doing it hard. You were, like, headbanging, basically.
But they pulled up during the blood scene. But,
it looked like a sarcastic headbanging because your eyes were rolling in the back of your head while you were headbanging. You look like a sarcastic headbanger.
I kept thinking he didn't see it.
Oh, yeah. You're right next to me. So this was such a cool scene. Let's describe this a little. Well, I'll describe it because you were in and out of consciousness. They have Patrick Stewart's, like, drugged up and he's laid down. And I think somebody else.
You're looking at me like you want an answer.
Well, I was a little confused.
Let's go with curls.
But basically the blood comes out of his face and his mouth and it starts to, like, form into this blob in the middle of the helicopter as they're all flying.
That.
And then it creates the form of the space girl, but she's, like, covered in blood, like Carrie style. It is so cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
I loved this scene. I mean, there's a lot about this movie as far as the effects go. Were really cool. Clearly, this is where their budget went, and Patrick Stewart. And so, but she forms. Also, here's a fun fact for you.
I'm ready for it.
The French babe, the main one, the nudie that's walking around all day.
Nudie cutie.
Guess how long she actually has screen time in this entire, like, 2-hour movie?
Can I guess 19 minutes?
You could, and you would be way off.
What is it?
7 minutes.
Are you kidding?
That's how powerful her, like, one stare scene is. Because I'm like,
whoa. That's the power of nudity.
I don't even think it's the nudity. It was just her face, like, her look and everything was so cool that I'm like, oh, she's the main character. She's only in the film for 7 minutes.
That's
total.
Bonkers.
It's, I know. Like, and she's, like, the main character.
What's the Kylie Minogue song where she's like, nudity?
It's called Nudity.
Okay.
Okay.
Was that song 7 minutes long?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Okay, so that's what happens on the helicopter. She forms and basically then disappears. And she's gone, and they have to find her, and they discover she's left, and she's in, like, a cathedral somewhere, and they're going to track her down.
I'm looking at her notes right now, my notes, and it's, like, explosions, blue light, they're hunting for her, my head just fell, London, Isolade, and then I think that's maybe Isolated.
Oh, I loved this. So you would occasionally open your eyes and looked confused, like, wondering if I saw, and then as though, like, you were a student in college, you would quickly jot something down, like you were taking notes, and I was like, I just saw you sleeping through that whole scene. There is nothing you could possibly be writing other than, I am sleeping.
I wrote me nodding off, blue storm, chaos.
Well, it was a good attempt. So
I tried hard.
While you were writing that,
what's actually happening?
We find out Tom and the girl are connected because while they were in space, he actually opened the coffin, and that's how, like, he busted it open and nobody knew.
Okay.
Then there's pure alien chaos. This is where I remember the film, which is at the end of the very end of the movie. I'm like, oh, I remember this film now. Because it's when they're all running around and it's pure chaos. Like,
yes.
London's burning, basically. And then I wrote, Mariah is fully asleep at this point.
Oh.
So you missed a lot of fun. This was where all the effects were really going crazy.
I woke up at some point and wrote zombie vampires.
Yeah, there are.
Zompires?
Not quite yet. I mean, they're starting to show. Tom and Kane go to the prime minister to be like, you have to do something. And we find out the prime minister is an alien. Mm-hmm. Like, we see a silhouette of him sucking the life out of his secretary,
yeah,
which I thought was pretty cool. then the British are like, look, we're just going to nuke all of London. We're just going to take it all down.
That's probably where I wrote London Isolade.
Yeah. Which is great. Have you noticed how many movies they're like, well, it's an island. We'll just...
It's a real easy...
We'll just nuke it like 28 days later. So, yeah, where they just isolate it. Anyway, so that's the plan. And then their alien ship has now positioned itself directly over London. And this giant blue beam is going down from the alien ship through the sky into a cathedral.
Into a church, yes.
And we find out that this is transporting all the people that are sucking the life out. It's capturing the souls of humans. And all those souls, like Ghostbusters style, are...
Yeah, I thought Ghostbusters, too.
Very Ghostbusters. And Poltergeist style, too.
Oh, yeah.
But they're going into this blue beam and going up into the mothership where they're, like, receiving all the energy because they're space vampires. Then the alien girl, the space girl, main one, decides she no longer wants to be connected to Tom and she wants her part of the life force back that she had given him so that they could stay connected because her job's like done. They're doing their job. And so then he's like, well, I got to get to her. She's in a cathedral. Kane is saying, we got to put a stop to this. He's driving and he tries to track down maybe I got a little ahead. I feel like, because I screwed up my notes just a tad, I think maybe this is when he kills the doctor and takes the sword.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah, he pulled
it
the
is.
Sword
okay.
out of the dead guy, yes.
Yep. Okay, so this is where he takes the doctor. Yep, because there's, look, I made a little line. I just got ahead. This is where he takes the medieval sword or shoots him or whatever and takes the sword and then he's going to go in. Tom goes to the girl who's in the cathedral and she explains everything that he was destined.
Space girl, yeah.
Yeah, to take them to the earth and that he can be with her.
Yeah.
And then that's where we see a whole city filled with zombie vampires.
Yep, I write loads more chaos and fire, screams, vampires collecting the blue light, pulsating, and then. Curls re-enters.
Yeah, Curls.
He's there to save the day. He's got the sword.
And there's the, like, uber hunk, the one of the two vampires, the one that hadn't been killed yet. He's, like, the gateway that's receiving all the souls and then giving them to
like
her.
Like you do.
Which I realized at the very end of the film, oh, this is his only purpose. Because I thought, what are the point of the other two guys beyond looking good? It's because they're like the receivers and she's the sender. And so he's receiving and Kane sneaks up with the sword, which reminds me, you know what it reminds?
Whoa.
I just had a moment.
Qua.
I need to know when the Golden Child was made.
1946.
Because not only does the sword look the same, like that dagger that Eddie Murphy has, but when he stabs him, this guy turns into that weird winged stop-motion demon bat creature that looks kind of like the Golden Child
one. It's comparable.
One. I wonder if it's the same special effects
Maybe
guy.
Maybe it's just an 80s thing.
Maybe.
Probably.
So he stabs him, he turns into this weird bat creature, dies, and then that's when I'm like, why didn't he just shoot him with a gun?
With a lead bullet.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Then we go inside the cathedral, and Tom and the space girl are having this, like, love fest.
They're like
within the soul stream,
humping in the blue light.
Yep, like you do.
Yep.
I mean, that's whatever. It's got to be like an aphrodisiac to have souls running through you while you're making out.
Maybe not. I feel like maybe it'd just give you the runs or something.
Or it'd be like ticklish. Give you the runs. It could go either way. It could either be like really good or not good. Seems like it's good for them. But Kane arrives, and he's like, you got to put an end to this. And Tom knows it. He's like, this is crazy. This is bonkers.
He's torn, though, because she's like, you're one of us.
I'm hot. We could be doing this all the time. Yeah.
We're in the blue light. Obvs. Let's go.
Yeah. But Kane throws the special sword down. And Tom...
The unnecessary sword.
Totally. Except for this scene.
Yeah.
Tom does, this is all I could think of was Friday the 13th when Jason stabs the spear through the couple on the bed. He stabs the sword through her, through him, impaling them both.
I feel like it was a gut shot and she would die more quickly than him.
And she would have for sure because it was lead.
Yeah.
And so.
And he would have gotten lead poisoning and died like 10 years later.
Yeah. But it, but it kills. Well, he should really see a doctor. They're everywhere in this movie. So, kills them both, puts an end to it. The world is saved. And I love the scene right after that. The ship, like, actually does a U-turn and is like, well, this place sucks. Like, this is spent. This party is spent. And they just take off. Mm-hmm. It just, there's nothing more to it. They really cut their losses, like, yeah, right away.
My notes say, Curls watches as the blue light shoots off and the spacecraft returns to the comet.
And that's it. That is Life Force. What did you think?
Well, I fell asleep through about 25 minutes.
What did you
of
think
it?
Of the 25 minutes you watched of it?
I really watched most of it. Okay. I would say the majority. I enjoyed it, actually. I thought it was pretty good. I would have liked to have been more well-rested, perhaps, but maybe not.
I loved the effects in this. It was fun. They
you
were kind of campy, but kind of awesome. They were 80s good. Like, you could tell that they didn't have a massive, massive budget, but they had a pretty decent budget.
They did. I think you're right.
And some of the scenes in there... This is where I would call it a classic, because the scene of, like, that corpse coming to life, mm-hmm, and then reanimating, that's like a classic scene.
Yeah,
and
that was great.
I would describe that to somebody if I would say, have you ever seen Life Force? Do you remember that one scene? Like, that's amazing. And then there's just a lot to this film that I like. Sure, it's kind of a mess. There's a lot of loose ends. It's not that great. But overall, this was a cool film. I did like it. I enjoyed it. I didn't know what to expect.
No.
It was a little cooler than I thought it would be. I was hoping it would be a little more campy so that we could, basically for the sense of our podcast, have an easier time, because then you could just make fun of it the whole time. But mm-hmm, I was like, this film's kind of cool.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty good. I would say it probably could have been edited down, because...
it was dramatically edited
down. In the 25 minutes I fell asleep, my notes basically just said chaos, and I didn't miss much.
Yeah, the scene right after the helicopter, with a really cool scene where she comes out of the blood.
Yeah, which I saw.
I felt like it should have wrapped up pretty quick after that. The scene where it goes to the, like, London in chaos, as fun as that was, it went on forever. Mm-hmm. And in my notes, why my notes got confused was I thought we were done and I was on my last page. And then I was like, oh, nope, we're not done. And
more
so I
chaos.
Wrote on the back of that one upside down. And then when I was, like, rewriting them to make sense of it, I forgot that whole page because I was like, oh, yeah, the film wasn't done yet.
No.
So it could have probably wrapped up a little bit sooner. But all in all,
it was good.
Solid
I would
film.
Definitely watch it, and I would recommend it.
Just because I fell asleep,
don't take that as, like, a sign that it's a bad movie, because I fall asleep all the time.
Yeah, but as far as, like, Tobe Hooper films go, this is a good one. I mean, I would definitely, if somebody was to bring his name up, I would say Texas Chainsaw, and then I would probably say Life Force. Like, why wouldn't you want to watch that? So,
yeah,
it was good. I had fun. Hopefully you guys enjoyed listening to it. You can follow us on Instagram at Laser Graves. You can follow us on, our personal EK Wimmer on Instagram.
You're at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
And then we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Podbean. I don't know. We're probably on a couple other things now.
I want to say thank you to those of you who have given us 5-star reviews and who have rated us. It's really helping. We've seen
a lot of increase,
which is exciting for us.
It makes it worth it, because we don't have sponsors yet or anything. We're just totally doing this because it's fun. So that every time we see a new rating or review, we're like, oh, people actually are listening.
Yeah,
this is so much fun.
It's very exciting. So thank you to those of you who have done that. And if you haven't and you feel so inclined to give us a 5-star review, we would really super appreciate it.
Yeah. So that's our spiel. And we will get back to you next week. I'm not sure what we have coming up, but I'm sure it'll be fun. I can tell you this.
Yes.
It'll take place in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And with that, we're going to call it a day. Bye.
Bye.